Good morning, and welcome to New York Sports and Beyond on 98.7 ESPN, where our goal every week is to entertain, enlighten, and expose you to information that can lead to positive change in your life. I'm Larry Hardesty. This morning, we'll focus on the topic of dementia, but from a caregiver's perspective. My guest is Ellen Belk. She's a certified dementia practitioner and president of Keep In Mind, Inc. She will share some insights on what options you have to help your loved ones suffering from dementia. As always, we suggest you are prepared to take down some valuable information you will hear on the show this morning, and we thank you for allowing us to be a part of your Sunday. New York Sports and Beyond talks dementia when we return on 98.7 ESPN New York. Welcome back to New York Sports and Beyond on 98.7 ESPN. I'm Larry Hardesty. Well, Ellen Belk started out as a sportscaster and reporter, and now she is one of the foremost authorities in dementia care. It is a holistic approach about dementia that has landed her among the tops in her field, and she joins us this morning on New York Sports and Beyond. So join me in welcoming an old friend, that's O-L, not O-L-D, Ellen Belk. I used to know her as Ellen Roberts. Now she's Ellen Belk. Hey, Ellen, thanks for joining me this morning.
It's my pleasure, Larry. Glad to be back in your world again, my friend.
So before we get started with the great stuff you're doing now, let's take a stroll down memory lane for a moment, shall we? How did you get to doing this great work in dementia care with a holistic approach? Last time I saw you, you and I were talking giant football up at camp.
Man, we were. Those were the days. If you really want to go back, and if I could toot my own horn, I was covering the Jets when the whole is he not Bill Belichick going to be our new coach or not press conference. If you remember, I broke that on one of your shows in our background from the bathroom at the Jets stadium at Hofstra University training camp. By the way, how did I get from there to here, Larry? I was still a citizen like you were of New York City, on 9/11. And I had been doing the radio thing for a long time, and I actually was in between jobs at that point. As you very know, that's how our world works. Mm. And so when 9/11 happened, and I was still in the New York market but wasn't solidly planted on the ground in radio at that point, I kind of came back to home base, which home base for me is Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And at that time, I when I got back to Milwaukee, Larry, that's where my radio career had began. And all the same kind of players were still in the same place. And my life had, my perception on the world had just changed so exponentially after 9/11. So when I did go back home and kind of regrounded myself, I purposefully made the conscious choice to try to use my communication, my broadcasting degree, and all the great work that I had done in radio. I wanted to transition that into a new market, and I legitimately chose healthcare. In my brain, it made perfect sense that a person with my background, my experience, in many markets would be a perfect, hospital spokesperson or somebody that would, use my voice and communicate a message, just like I had done in all my years in radio, and do that for the healthcare industry. The problem was nobody saw it the way that I did. And so every interview I went on, literally, I had great interviews, and no one could get past the fact that I covered the Jets, covered the Giants, and they couldn't get past my sports background. And so it was awkward and uncomfortable for quite a long time until somebody took a chance on me. And Larry, picture this. I'm living and working in New York, sitting courtside at Madison Square Garden. 6 months later, after 9/11, after I leave, I retransition back to Milwaukee. 6 or 7 months later, I am literally working as an activity assistant in a skilled nursing home in Bumblescrew, Wisconsin. Mm. And it was, you talk about a weird dynamic and a paradigm shift in my brain. But I will tell you this, as crazy as that sounds, they needed a warm body. As I look back now, I wasn't even qualified to do that job. They needed a warm body, and I became that warm body. But Larry, within probably 7 or 8 days of working in a skilled nursing facility, but predominantly with people with dementia diagnosis at that time, I was hooked. I knew that this big personality, my big voice, that this was what was supposed to happen. And it kind of took off from there. And I actually grew very quickly. I grew quicker in healthcare than I actually did in my radio career, where I had a broadcasting degree. You know, you have to knock on 1,000 doors in radio and
sure.
work in, you know, tank towns here and there. And I did all that. I played all those games to get where I got in New York in radio. But in healthcare, boy, you know, I might have been a warm body on the front end, but I used my skill set to really navigate the industry quite quickly, and I got advanced certifications. And I had bosses along the way that believed in me and helped me grow, and here I am. You know, gosh, in my 18th year now, as a dementia solutions expert and covering the country for the organization that I work for. So I'm pretty blessed.
There's no doubt about that. And ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you from working with Ellen, we've done shows together. She was also co-hosting a show with our Don LaGreca and former ESPN guy Al Gattulo.
Mm-hmm.
She's done a bunch of different things. We've also worked together with athletes helping athletes and mm-hmm. trying to mentor high school students. So the passion that Ellen has for what she does, I'm not surprised that she's jumped into this dementia situation with both feet, arms, legs, eyes, and everything else. And that's why I wanted her to be on the show this morning. As a certified dementia practitioner, Ellen, caregiving is I want to talk to you about helping folks from the caregiving aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we've had a number of doctors on. We understand what dementia is, and you can run through it again for us so we have a fundamental understanding. But this time, I really wanted to give the caregivers some ideas, some solution, Ellen, some sense of being able to do something, because as a caregiver, sometimes you really feel helpless.
You do. Well, I'm hoping it's common knowledge to your listening audience that you are walking this journey as well. Is that
yes.
something
mm-hmm.
that you've shared?
Yes.
And as I shared with you behind the scenes, I too walked this journey with my father, who was he's the guy. You talk about an athlete. My dad was an amazing athlete as a young man, and all of us, you know, I'm one of five knuckleheaded children that he and my mom brought into this world, and we all, you know, were athletes in our own right. But my dad and that love of sport and he's from Rochester, New York, you know, born and raised. So my dad also, like, you know, that how it's touched your life. I was about 10 years in the business, actually. I'd already transitioned into healthcare and was really working my way up the food chain in the industry and in long-term living, which is where I, you know, landed. That's dementia care for me. And dad was diagnosed with a dual diagnosis. In our situation, dad had a Parkinson's and Lewy body dementia mix. And so I'm a professional person, have helped thousands of families throughout my career. But again, Larry, just like anything, once it happens to you personally, it really does change molecules and it makes you see things differently. So I will tell you this, though, because I had already established my holistic philosophy, I'd already had a decent amount of success in dementia care prior to dad's diagnosis, of that. I really truthfully, and I'm even a stronger person for it now professionally, because I really truly used the things that I'd taught people for 10 years, the things that I'd done with residents who, you know, I cared for that were not related to me. I employed those same tactics with my own father and the man that, you know, brought me into this world. So I really am living and breathing what I am, that person that lives it and breathes it and then practices it as I preach it. So tips for caregivers, I mean, I could go on and on. And in the essence of time, the one thing that it is hard, it's not easy, but I hope you'll understand, because I know you're living it too. When you're a caregiver of someone with a dementia, which FYI is, you know, is a degenerative progressive brain disease. Far too often I have families that have said, my mom, she knows exactly what she's saying. She's just trying to get under my skin like she always has. I mean, it's sad to me, because I'm like, would you say to somebody who's got COPD, that, you know, which is chronic pulmonary disorder, that, you know, has a breathing tube, would you ask them to run a marathon with you? No, you wouldn't, because you could see that they would be physically incapable of doing that due to their illness. But because dementia is so often between the ears, out of sight, in the brain, from you know, people with dementia, often on the front end especially, they don't look sick. So we... we there's so many misconceptions about it. So families think they're faking it, or they're, how can they not remember? How do you not remember? So I guess what I, my main tip for people that are actively caring for a loved one with a dementia is to please remember. You need to remember, because they can't remember. You need to remember that this absolutely is a progressive degenerative brain disease. They are not screwing with you. They are not trying to get under your skin. They really legitimately can't remember. Treat it as the disease and respect that that is what's happening inside your loved one's head. Try to suspend it. And at some point, we as caregivers, Larry, we need to, and it's not easy, and believe me, I know what I'm about to say, it doesn't always go over well, but we have to, that's why they call Alzheimer's, for example, the long goodbye, because the person that raised you, if it's a parental situation, or the person you said I do to, if it's your spouse, or your sister that you happen to be taking care of, or whoever this person is to you, you literally have to look at them. You can't look at them in the way that you've always known them. You now have to look at them as a caregiver. Enjoy the moments and create amazing moments, but don't, you're mourning their loss in real time while you're caring for them, and it's not easy, but when you kind of try to come to grips with that and not let negative energy or negative thoughts or a bad attitude impact your caregiving, the recipient of your care is so much better for that. They don't need to be reminded that they don't remember. They don't need to be reminded that you've told them something five times. You tell them something five times, because that's what somebody with a brain disease needs you to do, to be compassionate and caring and not point out their deficiency, but to care in a new relationship model, but care from the heart. That's where things have to start in a family, in a familial caregiving situation, for sure, Larry. And those are not easy things to overcome, but the caregiving actually goes better for both sides of the equation when you approach it with a little more of an understanding of what I've just said.
Ellen Bell is a certified dementia practitioner. She's president of Keep In Mind, Inc. She's done a number of other things as well. We'll talk to her about that also. You're listening to New York Sports and Beyond here on 98.7 ESPN. I'm Larry Hardesty. Ellen, the toughest thing as a caregiver that you go through, and what you just pointed out, is it's that emotional tear of realizing that the loved one, you know, Ellen, is not that person anymore. They're not that person, and you have to, it's tough, but you have to try to make that adjustment on the fly, as you said, and realize that in some cases, as the dementia gets worse, Ellen, there'll be a loss of communication, there'll be a loss of movement. There's some people, it gets even worse. So if you can, you know, hold on to the caregiving role, and we both know it is not an easy thing that we're asking people to do.
Right.
But that's the road that you have to go on, and you're right. You can't keep reminding people, you know. And it's a spirit. It's a thing that just happens. I just told you.
Yeah.
We just talked about this. You know, it's the off the cuff thing that happens. But it's almost like a retraining of yourself that you have to walk a different road now.
Well, and a couple of things to touch on there. Number one, and people have to be very introspective. Truthfully, dementia caregiving is not for everybody. So I told you I'm one of five children. In my situation, I actually am a long distance. My father's journey is over. We just celebrated it. Well, we remembered in July, the second year of my dad's passing. But I, throughout his journey, I was a long distance caregiver. I told you I was in Wisconsin, and I was, but I now live in the Carolinas. But my mom and dad are back in Wisconsin. So are my siblings. And of the five of us, now granted, in our situation, it's slightly unique because I actually specialize in what my dad's, you know, dementia journey was. My mother was his primary caregiver, and I was the long distance, and there's all kinds of tricks and techniques. If you've got listeners who are long distance care providers, I absolutely was on the phone in the office, you know, as he had doctor's appointments with his neurologist, they conference called me in from 850 miles away because I wanted to still be on the trips that I couldn't make it to be there in person. I was there remotely, and they were gracious enough to do that with me. There are a lot of things that long distance caregivers can do to monitor the situation and keep track of things. But to get back to your point, it's not for all people. You know, just in my own family, we had a couple that were in complete denial, and they lived 15 miles from where my mom and dad live, and they would see my mom and dad more than me, and they absolutely acted like nothing was wrong when clearly something was wrong. So people need to understand that not everybody needs to be a dementia caregiver. So if you are, number one. And number two, Larry, the other thing that I always want everyone to remember, and it happened with me, even at my dad's, you know, late in my dad's journey, when, to your point, speech was becoming difficult. All of us, and dementia, again, progressive degenerative brain disease, you're losing your memory, okay, but you're not losing your mind. And I want your people to hear me when I say that. You're losing your memory, for sure. It's a part of who you are. But you're not losing your mind. You're not losing your heart. You're not losing the soul that's deep inside you. You still are a person who you might not be able to articulate your thoughts and needs or have strong conversations. But if you remember as a caregiver that you're still caring for the heart and soul of the person that you've always known, that also gives you a different prism as you do deliver the care, to remember that there is somebody in there, and even though we're communicating differently, or maybe I'm the only one communicating, but when they give me a smile or they squeeze my hand, my person is still in that body, deep, deep down in their heart and soul where the disease does not touch.
Yeah, that's a great point, because you don't have the interaction the way you're used to. Mm-hmm. Ellen, it's like a person who is blind and you're yelling at them. It's like, no, I'm blind, but I can hear, you know, it's, you just have to retrain yourself and say, you know what? Sometimes Ellen, it's just a grab of your hand.
Absolutely.
That's the communication. And sometimes that's what you have to live on and understand that, you know what? They're still in there. They still listen.
Yep.
They still know.
Yep.
They're living what they're going through, but they just can't communicate with you in the normal way.
Mm-hmm. I ask people, I challenge people, and people who are listening. I have a training that I do. It's called "Do You Speak Dementia?" And I titled it that on purpose, "Speaking Dementia." And when I say speaking, that involves everything, the managing, the interacting, the actual speaking, because, again, you know, there is a knack to that. It's not for everybody. And that's okay. That's absolutely okay. As you and I cared for our loved ones in the home. We had help that came in. I don't know if you have that, but some people are like, oh, no, I must throw my hands up and this cannot happen. And I am going to put my loved one into a long-term care community, and that's okay too. You have to, because really ultimately what you're trying to do, whether these are people with cancer or these are people with any kind of a progressive degenerative disease, unfortunately, what I need people to hear is that, you know, there is right now, as this conversation, as we're having this conversation, there is no cure. Whether you have an Alzheimer's dementia, which is the number one type of dementia, but there are over 100 different conditions that create the dementia dynamic, which is impacted memory, cognitive ability, linear thinking, and you start to notice those things if you're paying attention, when your loved one can't balance the checkbook anymore. Or they forget how to get home from church. Those are the early, early warning signs that we kind of tend to overlook because we think, oh, grandma's getting old. Oh, my husband's 90 or 80 or whatever. That's normal. Actually, it's not normal. Dementia is not a normal part of aging. Forgetfulness, absolutely. If I can't remember your name, if I haven't seen you in a long time and I'm struggling, is it Larry? Was it Leroy? That's me being forgetful as I'm an 80 or 90-year-old person. But I know who you are. I know that we know each other. So there's a difference. There is forgetfulness that we all go through as we age, but literally having the type of forgetfulness that impacts my life, impacts my safety, that's not common. So people need to know that as well, whether it's Alzheimer's, whether it's Lewy body dementia. Larry, you know, some people have what we call it's an alcohol related. It's Korsakoff syndrome. They've given it kind of a crazy name, but Korsakoff syndrome, which is a vitamin B deficiency due to a long untreated, undiagnosed, untaken care of, if you will, alcoholism. So again, you know, people with special needs. We have many in my world. I've had many clients that had a special needs diagnosis, and because those individuals are living into their 50s and 60s, as where they didn't back in, you know, decades ago, they sometimes also have a dementia diagnosis. HIV, people with an HIV primary diagnosis. Again, we've done amazing things with that, particular disease journey, and people are living. They're living with AIDS. Well, unfortunately, we are also in my world starting to see people who have survived that, but I don't know if it's the med cocktail that they've had to take. I don't know why, but we're seeing an increase in HIV-related dementia. So again, people need to remember there's a variety of ways that you get it, but listen, we're two people on this phone, and it's impacted our life. Mm-hmm. Really, truthfully, as your listeners will, if you pay attention, you're like, you know, that whole Kevin Bacon thing, 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like 1 degree of separation. If it hasn't touched your life specifically, it's touched somebody that's close to you in their life. So it is a growing. It's the number, you know, it's like the sixth leading cause of death. And so we just need to be very much more mindful of how we treat these people that are going through this disease process.
39% of all adults in the U.S. are dementia caregivers, and 1 in 3 over 85 have dementia. So do you speak dementia? Don't look at me like that. We'll explain when New York Sports and Beyond continues on 98.7 ESPN.
You don't have to worry, oh baby,
welcome back to New York Sports and Beyond on 98.7 ESPN. I'm Larry Hardesty. Ellen Belk is my guest. She's a certified dementia practitioner, president of Keep In Mind, Inc. She's done some other things. We'll talk about that as well. You mentioned earlier, do you speak dementia? Break that down for me.
Again, it is the everything from... Okay, if no one listens to anything else I say, this is what I challenge everyone within the sound of my voice to stop doing immediately. Stop asking people with dementia if they remember. Mom, don't you remember? Hey, don't you remember? Don't you remember? No, they don't remember. I'm telling you they don't remember. Let's move on. So speaking dementia properly and effectively is first of all, not using combative language that constantly smacks the person proverbial in the face, you know, metaphorically in the face, with being reminded that they have a deficit. So it's living, speaking dementia also includes living in the reality, whatever that reality is. Today, you know, and again, you might be able to attest to this. I had to deal with this where Dad believed something. You know, at one point in his journey, he was convinced the house was on fire. I was there personally in this experience. Our house was not on fire. I was caring for my dad. It was overnight at 3 o'clock in the morning, and that's when the demons of Lewy body, which was his journey, kind of rear their ugly heads. So I had to gently, instead of saying, Dad, our house is not on fire, I had to literally show him. We walked through the home where he thought there would be fire. When we got there, there was no fire. So instead of arguing with him while he laid in bed saying, yeah, house is on fire, I knew that I was never going to win that argument, because I speak dementia friendly, I decided to show empathy, hold his hand and say, let's go check things out to make sure. And voila. So it's living in their reality, whatever that reality is. If they think it's 1972 and we're getting ready to go on a vacation to the Adirondacks, well, guess what? Let's let them think that, if that's going to get us through an uncomfortable situation with them, if they need to believe that, because people are sometimes say, well, Ellen, that's lying to people. It's really not. Again, speaking dementia, living the dementia journey in a thoughtful way is really truly doing whatever it takes us to do to make that person comfortable. These are non-medicinal things that I'm talking about, Larry, because certainly... Mm-hmm. You know, we could pump people full of medication and not worry about these things. But if you're trying to do it in the way I, you know, like to, medication is sometimes not good for people with a dementia anyway, depending on the journey. But again, so speaking dementia is not correcting. Speaking dementia effectively is answering the same darn question 5 times in a row in a kind and gentle way. Because think about it. if that person that you know and love that you're caring for, if this was 20 years earlier, you know they would not ask you the same question five times in a row. So fast forward to now, the reason they're doing that is because they have a disease. And we have to remember that and act accordingly to constantly, keep the ship that we're sailing in as even keeled as possible. Because once we start creating conflict with someone with a dementia diagnosis, the caregiving gets much more difficult. So you really are trying to do it, A, because it's the dignified thing to do for those that you love, but B, it also actually makes the caregiving easier mm-hmm. when that relationship is strong and it's not combative.
Ellen, you mentioned medicine before. You have a holistic approach. It was fascinating when we talked about it on the phone before. Take my audience through your holistic approach.
So I listen, there's going to be people on this call that are hearing me saying, oh my gosh, what is she kidding? We have to have, medication. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't have medication. Clearly I had to, we had to make those decisions and my dad did have, had certain levels of medication. His journey, again, if you know anything about Lewy body, which is the second most diagnosed dementia behind Alzheimer's, by the way, there are only a couple of medications that have actually been designed and created to treat dementia, to work with, especially Alzheimer's. Aricept, Aricept was the first drug on the market. It actually was created for Alzheimer's, the Alzheimer's strain of dementia, okay? Other drugs that have come along, the trazodones of the world, Seroquel, these are words that anyone that's caring for somebody might recognize. These are not drugs that were originally created. Seroquel and trazodone, for sure, are not drugs or medications that were created for people with the dementia. They're going off-label to use them, and if you ever look at any, if you ever Google any of those two words, Seroquel or trazodone, most notably, Haldol is making a comeback, that's another one. Those were drugs that were created for, schizophrenia in one instance, depressive, and they actually have black box warnings to not be used in elderly dementia patients because they do expedite death. So holistically is where I like to start as you're trying, especially to care for your loved one in your own home. My four-pillar philosophy starts with the environment. The care environment that you are caring for your person, it can work against you, and it often does. If you have piles and clutters, if it's a disorganized space, if there's throw rugs and uneven flooring, and the lighting is only fluorescent, or if you keep it dark because you keep your shades down all day. Those are just a couple of examples of how that's not a good environment, not a good living environment for somebody with any kind of dementia. We need them to have day-night orientation. We need them to see the outside. We need them to literally get outside. We really want that because natural vitamin D, it helps the serotonin levels inside somebody who's struggling with the brain, with this brain disorder. We want them to sleep well through the night. So the environment needs to work for you. Number two is communication. I'm telling you, it's not uncommon when the proverbial shizzle hits the fan in a caregiving situation, because your loved one is being combative or they're being resistant. Something has triggered that. And typically it tends to be an environmental trigger. Or it tends to be a communication trigger. I'm not being nice to you. I'm tugging at your clothes as I'm trying to get you dressed in the morning. I'm rushing you as your caregiver. That sets the stage for conflict throughout either right immediately or for sure throughout the day. So communication, proper communication, all the things I've already talked about in our conversation, those are good starting points to be able to effectively, holistically set the stage for a good caregiving environment. And number three is nutrition. Larry, I cannot tell you, I did this with my own dad. I practice what I'm about to say personally as well. I travel a lot on business. And I'm about to say something, and hopefully everyone, I know it's early in the morning today, but, when you and I or anybody, when we are constipated, And if you and I are, we know, oh gosh, I'm constipated, I need to do something to, you know, eradicate that situation. Constipation in aging bodies in general is a real thing, but constipation in a dementia situation is also a very real thing. Your loved one hasn't gone to the, they haven't evacuated their bowels in 2, 3, 4 days. Sometimes I've had situations where it's up to a week. Think about what that would feel like if it was you and I. You'd be uncomfortable, you'd have bloating, you would feel off, you would be agitated. That happens with people with dementia. They can't tell us that that's happening. And so there will be spikes in outbursts. There will be behavioral spikes, resistance to care, legitimately because they're constipated and they just can't tell us that. So, again, getting nutritional support, I gave my dad prunes every day. Every morning he got prunes. I do the same thing now as I travel, and it's a natural way to keep that part of your system in line, and that's very important with somebody with a dementia diagnosis. Hydration. You know, people who with 75% of all Americans, Larry, are dehydrated. That includes you and I and everybody mm-hmm. listening. 75% of all Americans are. When you have aging bodies with dementia, you need them to be properly hydrated. It's good for 1,000 different reasons, but if you are dehydrated, it increases confusion. So what do you not want to do is increase confusion due to dehydration in somebody who's confused because of their disease. So proper nutrition, getting good, you know, fruits and vegetables, and keeping using food as medicine, not a lot of processed food. You want as much natural food to keep all of the, you know, the insides of your person and with this disease, you know, healthy and well, and well, because your food is and can act as your medicine to keep your systems moving and your skin that gets, you know, weaker as we age. Again, if it's hydrated, that those things are all very helpful. And then my fourth pillar. So I've got communication, environment, nutrition, and then my fourth pillar of my holistic philosophy centers on how keeping somebody engaged physically. Are we physically moving? Are we, you know, so often, again, people think, oh, mom's got dementia, she just sits in a chair all day. Well, it's not uncommon for people with dementia, especially early in the disease, they still can be very physically, they can move. We can still go to the grocery store. I took dad to Trader Joe's when we would go grocery shopping. He pushed the cart. Yes, he had dementia. I drove us there. You know, he was with me. I kept him living out loud. I wasn't locking him away and ashamed of what was going on. I mean, there came a point where I didn't do that out of, you know, respect for him, to maintain his dignity when other things started to go on. But for the first couple of years, you bet I did. We still went to church. We still did all the things. We kept as normal of a life as possible, and so I kept him physical, whether that's through physical exercise, whether that's through physical engagement, going for a walk, any type of programming engagement, not just plunking them in front of a TV and letting them watch that idiot box all day. That's the worst thing you could do. That is not a good thing for somebody with dementia to be staring at a TV or a computer screen or whatever. Is there music involved? Are we doing arts and crafts? If that's something that they engaged in it. If your loved one had a profession where they worked with their hands, be it a farmer, be it an electrician, well, let's replicate that in a dementia-friendly way, and let's have them still participate in those types of things, again, in a dementia-adapted way, but it keeps them engaged in things that are familiar to them.
Ellen, you've touched on so many things. I know we're not going to cover everything. We're going to have you back. I'm going to say that right now. But these are things that are just, you know, they sound logical and simple, but we're looking at it emotionally. And right. Emotionally, these aren't the same people, Ellen, so we don't look at it the same way.
Right, right. And again, I just go back to what I said. They are the same person physically. The mind, the body is still the same. You're right. You're mm-hmm. looking at them. They look the same, again, depending on where they are in their journey. But it really is incumbent to remember that they really are who they always were. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you something, actually, Larry. One thing that I've had this happen, again, I've been doing this a long time, and I've been in 1,000 different scenarios professionally. there are people. I cared for a gentleman early in my career. He was perfectly lovely. I had zero problems with him. His daughter was so cantankerous because she couldn't understand he was an alcoholic. He had not been a good guy when she, you know, in her growing up years. And here he was now a demented man in his 90s. He was perfectly pleasant. And there, that actually does happen. I just recently met another daughter that had a similar story, and she was a lot more accepting of it, understood that that disease in that situation actually changed molecules for the better in some situations. I've also had my very first job in Wisconsin. I had a woman that had been a Sunday school teacher in Wisconsin, played the organ. Honey, she swore like a truck driver in a parade. I mean, she had the worst language that she'd scream and shout because that was part of her journey. It was so counterintuitive to what her life had been like. And really all I can say about that, Larry, those things do happen. Mm-hmm. Because it's all in what part of the brain is going into atrophy first. It really is. That's the bottom way of saying it. What part of the brain is being impacted? Is it, you know, the social moray part of my brain where I, you know, don't, if I see someone who's overweight and I blurt that out as opposed to keeping that in my mind? People with dementia lose sometimes in the journey, can lose all that. So yeah, I mean, they still really legitimately are still a human being that you're engaged with. Mm-hmm. And when we, bottom line, Larry, how would you want to be treated if this
exactly.
was, how would I want to be treated? I really would want somebody to treat me like a human being that they love and care about, even though a lot of our dynamic is changing. That's how I kind of ask people to move through this and try. It's not easy. It's not easy, and it takes skill and practice, and sometimes you'll never master it, and that's okay, too.
Yep, but doing the best you can.
Do the best you can.
Absolutely. So far, Ellen and I have spoken about how you can help your dementia patient and loved one as a caregiver. Now we're going to give some tips for the caregiver. That's next on New York Sports and Beyond on 98.7 ESPN. Thanks again for joining us on this edition of New York Sports and Beyond. I'm Larry Hardesty. Let's wrap up my conversation with Ellen Bell. Tell me about how Keep In Mind, Inc. got started, and tell me about your husband, Dan, how you guys work together in this.
Well, he's amazing. I'm one of those lucky people that I found a lovely Southern gentleman who realized that when he met me, this was who he didn't even know me. Do you know, honest to gosh, my husband didn't know anything about my radio world. And he knew me when he met me. I was already kind of involved in this, and I'd done some things in dementia. And so he saw the passion. He knew that this was who I am. The reason we started Keep In Mind is because, weirdly, I did what I think a lot of new entrepreneurs do. I invented a product, and it's called Memory Mags. We still do sell that. I've got distributors, and we sell it through our website. And Memory Mags, we've only got two editions. The original idea was, I had worked in corporate care for many years at this point. I worked my way up, and I was at this point in my life, I was a divisional director. I oversaw 24 buildings across, parts of the country, and I was traveling. And I just felt like all the things that I shared with you just now about my holistic philosophy, none of that was happening. I didn't really have that philosophy at that time. I acquired that philosophy because I saw what we were doing wasn't working. And so I left the corporate grind, and I had kind of invented this product, Memory Mags, which are picture publications for people with dementia. It is something that I kind of played around with as an activity professional myself, and I knew that, colorful, vibrant pictures were people are with a dementia are drawn to that. It's basically a magazine for people with dementia, and it has no advertising in it. It's just full page pictures. So I kind of came up with that idea along the same line that I was really getting burned out from the professional grind. So I jumped off the springboard. I opened up a company because I thought everyone and their uncle was going to buy Memory Mags, and Dan and I would be rich. Somebody would come and buy our company, and we'd be on a Tahitian island 10 years from now. That's not how that actually worked. So we opened up, we created Memory Mags. We self-financed everything. We got two editions done. We started to sell them online. And what ended up happening was it wasn't paying the bills. It's a nice little mailbox money, but I realized that I had to be more. So what ultimately ended up happening was somebody who knew me in the business knew that I'd started my own business, and they asked me if I would come and be a consultant. And this was a Texas company, and they had about 30 memory care buildings, and they were doing the work, but they didn't feel that they were doing it right, and they asked me to come and evaluate, and I did. And through that journey, I also wrote a manual. I am also the author of, and it's a clunky name, but it's the 360-degree Dementia Care Operational Manual. This is for professionals. This is not available for people, you know, off the street necessarily. But it's an operational manual built on my team approach. So, Larry, what ultimately ended up happening was all my sports background, both personally at participating in sports and then obviously being a sports reporter for all those years, I literally finally found a way for my existence in healthcare to make sense where no one thought it made sense in the beginning, was to merge my team philosophy of how I've always kind of approached my professional life into now dementia. So the Dementia Operational Manual that I wrote, it is for professionals to approach the dementia care in a team-like capacity. So that's also part of our Keep in Mind business. And there's various, you know, I speak and there's various channels. Dan, God love him, my husband, he keeps the books. He keeps the invoices. He has stood by my side. He realized that this was something that he probably wouldn't get a good night's sleep if I didn't stop talking about it. So he's like, darn it, let's open this company. So we still have it. He takes video when I speak at conferences. He's literally, we both work, he works another real full-time job. We're not at the point where he gets paid. He's still my trusty sidekick right now. But so that's kind of how Keep in Mind has come to be. I am a little, it's a little shuttered right now. Keep in Mind still exists. We still sell our memory mags. I still do speaking engagements. But one of my clients who purchased the manual, who I consulted with for several years, 3 years, they actually hired me on full time. So I actually am employed right now by a company called Milestone Retirement Community. So I'm a national director. So now I was burned out, I told you before, when I oversaw 24 buildings. Well, now I've got close to 100.
So now this is a piece of cake.
Like getting out of the corporate grind thing very well. I got to work on that. But for now, that's kind of where my life journey has gone. But keep in mind, like I said, still exists, and I'm happy to thank you for letting me talk about it.
No problem, Ellen. I got a couple of minutes. I need some quick hits from you. All right, here we go. Number one, you mentioned earlier about you were an activities person. What are some really good activities that people can do with dementia patients?
In a home-like setting, most notably, I like to bounce balls. I literally kept a basket of balls, and I did do this with my own father. A Dollar Street tree basket with a tennis ball in there, or a rubber ball. If your loved one can't do that, I like squeezy balls. That is actually an activity for late-stage dementia. If your loved one is bed-bound, you absolutely can put something squeezable in their hand and wrap their hand around it and get them to even just move, squeezing a ball. I know it seems innocuous to us, but it is an activity for people who are at that stage of their journey. I like anything physical, whether it's, you know, marching in place for Pete's sake, or any kind of a DVD that you can do, chair exercises. I like anything with music. Larry, please hear me when I tell you, music, weirdly, I don't care what type of dementia you have, one of the last parts of the brain to be impacted by any type of dementia is the part of the brain where the music, the love of music and the memory of music is stored. So gentle, soft, familiar music, always, always a good quick hit. It's a no-brainer. And if you can throw in some animals and have, you know, let people be able to pet dogs or cats and have a grandkid come and visit so I can get some little kids with hugs and kisses, you've got all the resources to be very successful with activity.
How important is it, real quick, Ellen, for caregivers to be able to talk to somebody else about what they're going through?
it really should be mandatory. It should be mandatory for all caregivers to be part of a support group. It is. It does a world of good. There's so much impact comes from walking your caregiving journey with others that are walking that journey alongside you.
Locally, if somebody wanted to find out where to get help, what's the best way, if there's a general website, Ellen, that people can find out locally what they can do for caregivers or information about dementia to help them?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Alzheimer's Foundation of America. I do believe that is a New York-based company, organization. Alzheimer's Foundation of America, forgive me for not knowing their actual website, but if you Google that, they'll pop up. Chuck Fuscillo is the CEO. In fact, I think, again, people on Long Island might recognize that name. I believe he's a former politician in the New York market. And the other thing, because they've got a wealth of information, and ALZ.org, that is the Alzheimer's Association website. And to get to local resources, that's also a great place to start, ALZ.org. You know, type in your zip code, and all kinds of opportunities pop up for things that you can be engaged in and resources at your disposal. In addition, both of those organizations I've just listed, they also have 1-800 numbers that